Thanks very much for taking some time to talk to me. The new peasants, tell me, how long did it take you to, did they allow you to be part of their life while you were filming this documentary?
Yeah, I was lucky to be able to live on the property for 5 months all up. Initially, moving to the area, I was just living there on in a little cabin, and then the idea for this feature film came out while I was there, just participating in daily life and being a part of the family's rhythms. And we have made three short films with this family over the last 7 years, and so yeah, those have been very successful online, and there's just so much more to be able to explore in an hour-long film, which is what we've created here.
Yeah, that's right. And for people who don't know, it's really about a family that it's a 20-year experiment, isn't it, that they're living.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's been a slow journey over 20 years of seeing the issues that we're facing in the world, environmentally and socially, and these big picture problems, and then thinking, how do we as a family respond, and making those small changes to their life over those 20 years. So it's been 15 years since they've eaten food from the supermarket, and the same length of time since they've owned a car. But those things didn't happen overnight. It's been a transition over time, kind of step by step. Apparently, it started with giving up using bin liners on the rubbish bin. They realized, oh, we don't really need this because we can just rinse the bin. And that was the moment of like, oh, what else can we give up, kind of on this journey? And now, yeah, 20 years later, this film is a portrait of what their life looks like, and the rhythms and the beauty and the challenges involved in that. I've heard them say before, saying no to some things is saying yes to others, and I think that is so true and so valuable, because they're probably the most time-rich people that I know. So by saying no to Well, by embracing living below the poverty line on something like 30,000 a year, I think, and meeting most of their needs without money, has been able to free them up to have time to do these things that, a lot of us don't have time to grow as much food or process food or farm or, do all these activities that do take a lot of time. So by saying kind of no to certain things like car ownership, which can be expensive, has kind of been able to them to say yes to being at home more, and being more involved in these processes of their life.
It's also meant that they've built community. It's part of intrinsic to the economy of their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. It's essential to being able to live the way they do. They say around 80% of their needs are met without money. They still need to pay rates and have a very small electricity bill, and they do buy bits and pieces of food because they only live on a quarter of an acre. So a lot of the veggies they grow themselves, and meat and things, but other foods they do buy in. So there's a small requirement for money, but then 80% of it is met through the gift economy. So gift exchanges with neighbors and the wider community for different things. They run a bush school for local kids. There's about 10 to 15 kids who come every Monday, and that's completely free, or it's done in the gift economy. So the parents might bring food or secondhand clothes or building materials, and it's kind of an exchange in a way, but it's not a transactional one for one. It's that kind of gifting with the trust that these gifts will come back in some form, maybe not so direct.
There's an interesting dynamic within the film itself. It's obviously the way the people live, how Meg, Patrick, and Woody live, gives the ebb and the flow of the film. But there's other signposts as well. So one of them that I found incredibly interesting was when Patrick decided that there would be a more natural way of dealing with the copse, the wooded area, as opposed to allowing the CFA to do this intrusive burn, which is completely unnuanced. But the use of the goats, that sort of stuff, it changed the way people related to the environment, but also the management profile for the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe 100 meters from their house is this forest around Daylesford. And in a part of that forest, they are reducing the fire load using goats. So the goats eat blackberries and bring that highly flammable material down and reduce it. And this is an alternative to what they've seen the planned burns do in the past, where they can be very hot and destructive, very different to Indigenous burning, which is a cooler, slower burn. They've seen the devastation that can happen in certain situations, and they observed it in this forest. So, seeing that 10 years ago prompted them to think, oh, how are we going to manage this differently so they don't have to come and burn again? And so, for maybe 5 years now, they've been managing a herd of goats on common land, on Jarrah land, and it's basically operating due to social license. They don't have any council permits or anything. It's about getting all the neighbors on board, being involved and approving of that activity. I can see the benefit. They can appreciate the fact that the fire risk to their own homes is lessened because of this. And in exchange, this family gets meat from the goats. It's about them being able to farm essentially on common land because they've don't have the land themselves to have a big farm. So they can, I suppose, provide an ecological service and also meet some of their own needs through that as well.
But it also indicates that there is a altering of the community's understanding of the place where they live just by these people's approach to things. It's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very cool. Just it's a public demonstration of some of these values that this family lives, and even just walking past, and you can walk down this road and see where the goats are, and then maybe Patrick or Woody will be there, and you can have a chat about what's going on. It's that kind of seeing, oh, there's a different way of doing this, and I think that's a similar thing to many aspects of their life. They run tours occasionally of their home and garden too, and I think that's where the power is in being able to see an alternative way of doing something. I think a lot of us can see the issues that we're facing in the world and want to do something about it, and so to be able to see small ways that we can incorporate things into our lives and make our own changes in the face of these kind of larger issues.
The film is called The New Peasants, right? It's kind of funny, isn't
I really like the idea of the Nanu peasants and that kind of connection to their own ancestry as well. But yeah, bringing it into the modern day, they're not kind of trying to replicate, hundreds of years ago peasant life.
They're not unrealistic, which is quite interesting. And the other thing that's really interesting is the heartbreak and the effect that Zephyr's experience had, where their lifestyle was considered to be so different that it had a negative effect on him within the social community that he was growing up in the mainstream.
Their eldest son, that journey is shared within the film, and it is a emotional kind of harder story that we share. But I think it's important to show, these are real people and with real issues, and these things can happen. And it's I think it shows that challenge of doing something different in a world that kind of can see that as strange or weird, or you can come up against kind of the mainstream culture by trying to do things differently. And the challenges that Zeph has been through, that story is a part of that. Yeah, there's many factors to that that we do talk about in the film, but that is one of it, of that kind of tension between trying to do something different, but you're also still attached to the real world. He's still kind of part of it too.
And it's very generous of them to actually share that part of their journey with the viewing public. I'd have to say they're very courageous people, aren't they, really?
They are, I've been so inspired by them over the years, and sharing that story, I had known that story before beginning this film, but wasn't thinking it would be part of this story. But then maybe halfway through, they felt kind of called to share it, and I'm really glad they did, because this hard story informs a lot of the work they do, especially in the community, and kind of underlines a lot of that work they do. And so it's kind of in there to show, it's in there for a reason.
The other thing is the fact that they decide they're going to go on a journey, they're going to go overseas, and they obviously got themselves a passport and all the rest of it, so they must have followed those protocols. But they put on their knapsacks and then they just go out and thumb a ride. And then we get these pictures. They actually made it and they actually did it and they had a great old time.
When was it? Maybe 10 or 11 years ago, they did a big bike trip up to Cape York and back. Yeah, that's right. So they're very used to this kind of extreme form of travel, this radically simple travel. And so wanting to go to India, do some overseas travel, but not wanting to fly, that was the initial thought for it. And so the plan was to hitchhike and catch boats and, get all the way to India. So,
Did
yeah,
they
Woody
catch
could
boats?
experience another culture. They did. They have written about the experience on their blog, and they did make it. They did have to take a couple of short flights because they just physically couldn't, the bus wouldn't go there or anything. But they did. It took them about 2 months to get to India.
Yeah, that's fantastic, which is, the process is as important as the going. I presume that other people looked after their house or something. They closed off everything and then went off. But it's just pretty amazing. Everything about these people is amazing. It's you must have had a great old time making the film, though.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was such a unique experience because normally when we're making a film, it's a certain shoot schedule. It might be 3 days for a short film, it might be a couple of weeks, but it's, an intense set amount of days, and it's go, okay, we're going to fit this in that day and that day. But here I was just living on the property, so they could come over at any point and say, "Hey, we're doing this. Do you want to come and film it?" And I could just pick up my camera and go and really catch that organic, natural flow of the life. It was, it's it wasn't didn't feel staged or set up or anything. It was very organic, and it was a lot of fun participating as well. I was helping out in the garden. Part of my rent was doing 1 day's work on the land a week. So I got to learn a lot of skills myself as well.
The editing must have been the key element, really.
There was something like 65 hours of footage all up, which is a lot to get through. And yeah, we worked with an editor to help bring a fresh perspective and help us piece a lot of that together. So that was a really fun process, but it was so difficult because there's so much beautiful footage and so many avenues we could have explored further down. But it's that tricky space of reducing to make the story shine.
Yeah, which is what you do. And like I said, it's at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. Are you showing it in other places as well?
So the world premiere is this Sunday at the Melbourne Doc Film Fest on Sunday afternoon. And then that's kind of the beginning of the screening tour that I'm doing in Australia. August 1st, it screens in Castlemaine, Ballarat on the 2nd, and I'm doing about 14 screenings up the East Coast over the next 2 months. So we've got information on our website about those dates. We're still organizing it at the moment, but yeah, it's really exciting seeing it come together. The newpeasants.com links to our website where there's a big list of all the screenings and the film trailer and things like that, or happenfilms.com as well.